Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, closing arguments come this week in the stop and frisk constitutionality trial. The New Yorker's Jeffrey Toobin profiles the judge, who he says doesn't believe police officers. We will introduce a new Brian Lehrer Show project today, the Public Library Awards. Hear how your local library might win $10,000. We'll hear an argument published in the conservative New York Sun that Anthony Weiner would be the most conservative Democrat in the mayoral race. We continue with our series with the New York Times obituary editor, Bill McDonald. Let's see whose significant life they wrote about today. And Yahoo buys Tumblr. All that coming up in just 1 minute. Just want to remind everybody that we are in the home stretch of our spring membership drive. And right now we are in the second to last matching period of the membership drive, not to give away the plot, but the final one will come on Wednesday. But right now we have a very generous 50% match. That's in effect until 11 o'clock. So if you pledge this hour, we will get 50% more than you pledge because of a very generous matching fund that's now in effect from some of our donors. So please – it's Josh Sapan, WNYC trustee Josh Sapan. I should mention his name. We'll add a dollar for every $2 that you pledge. So if you pledge $100 right now, we'll get $150, et cetera, et cetera. So thanks for your support for the station. The spring membership drive is going to end on Wednesday, and we have the second to last matching period in effect only until 11 o'clock this morning. So, folks, come on through for us, join the station, or renew your membership for 2013 and do it right now while we get 50% more than whatever you pledge. The phone number is 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or make a secure e-pledge at WNYC.org to have your pledge matched right now and to support the station for this year and into May of next year. Thank you all so much for doing it. All right. And now, New Yorker Magazine staff writer, CNN legal analyst, and author of the book, soon out in paperback, The Oath, The Obama White House and the Supreme Court, Jeffrey Toobin on his latest two articles, what he thinks the real IRS scandal is, as opposed to the one we've been hearing about, and his profile of the judge and the legal history in the stop and frisk constitutionality case, which has closing arguments expected this week. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
And you take us in your New Yorker piece, which I like a lot, by the way. The history in there is really deep, and I think people who hear the stop and frisk debate and don't know some of this history should really read it, and we'll get a lot out of it. But one of the things you do is take us back to the Amadou Diallo shooting in 1999, an unarmed, completely innocent young man, an immigrant from Africa, coming home to his building in the Bronx, and he gets shot dead by a group of cops who misinterpreted a move he made in the vestibule of his own building. It was a big deal for people who are not paying attention to these things, or if you weren't in New York yet in 99, everyone from Al Sharpton to Ed Koch willing to get arrested.
To Bruce Springsteen, who wrote a famous song about it.
There you go, at demonstrations to protest the Yellow's death. But the policy debate that came out of that horror was about stop and frisk. Why was that?
Well, it really crystallized a lot of objections that some people had to the Giuliani era's period of aggressive policing, which contributed to a tremendous reduction in crime in the city, which continues to this day, but also offended a lot of people because it involved police officers going to places where there was a history of crime and really aggressively looking for people who might be violating the law. They did so by in part by arresting people for minor offenses that had previously been ignored, like jumping turnstiles, like writing graffiti on the walls. But they also approached people who were just engaging in what the cops regarded as suspicious activity. And in those interactions, that's what laid the groundwork for the fights that we're having today.
And the officers involved were acquitted in the manslaughter trial. That's not where the current judge, Shira Sheindlin, comes in, right?
No. Judge Sheindlin got in when a group of left-leaning lawyers from the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit that's known as the Daniels case in 1999, really challenging stop and frisk for the first time. That case kicked around in Shindlin's court until 2004 when there was a settlement. The settlement, in brief, called for increased training of the cops and more and better record keeping about why people were stopped on the streets.
Which resulted in, you tell us, the eye-popping number of 4 million forms being filled out by police officers between then and now.
It's an amazing fact that cops really did fill out these forms every time they stopped someone. At least that was the plan. And gradually, it seems like that they did really fill out these forms most of the time. And they had to check boxes on this form for why they stopped people. And the analysis of these forms, now, as you mentioned, millions of them, is really the key evidence in the case that's before Judge Shindlin now and what those forms tell us about how the cops are interacting with civilians.
Evidence in that the cops have to write down the reason for a stop to justify the stop on paper, and they include this very vague notion that you say is on like half of these forms, furtive movements.
Furtive movements, right. And the heart of the claim by the plaintiffs in this case is that if a cop simply sees furtive movement on the part of a civilian out in the street, that is insufficient grounds on which to stop someone. The Supreme Court has said it is legitimate to stop someone who has not committed a crime, but there's reasonable suspicion that they committed a crime. That's the famous Terry versus Ohio case from 1968. The furtive movement alone, according to the plaintiffs, is not enough, and that's really the heart of the dispute that's going on in Judge Shindlin's court.
By the way, I guess bureaucracy did not hold down stop and frisk. If they balloon the way they have under Bloomberg, even having to fill out this form for every stop and frisk, rather than being an impediment, it seems to have been irrelevant to Kelly and Bloomberg building this up by like 10 times the number of stops per year from when they started.
Well that's right. They would say it's not really 10 times more because that's just improved record keeping. But what makes this case so interesting, I think, is that it's not that the defendants, Bloomberg, Kelly, the city, are saying, no, 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 we didn't really stop and frisk anybody. They're saying, yes, we did, and it's a fantastic success. And look how much safer the city is. Look how much better life is for so many people, including especially in minority neighborhoods where crime is down so much. So that's
And hold that thought
sure.
for a second. I know where you're going with it, but I want to play you an example of it. And it's Ray Kelly, the police commissioner, on this show recently, a few months ago, when I asked him if stop and frisk is stopping hundreds of thousands of mostly young black and Latino men each year, and you're only finding like 0.1% of those people have guns, and it's supposed to be an anti-gun problem or program, then can you really say it's working? And here's what he said.
You know, just the potential of being being stopped obviously has some impact. Now, we're doing something right here in New York City. The 11 years of the Bloomberg administration versus the preceding 11 years. During the Bloomberg administration, 11 years, we've had 7,346 fewer murders.
So in the first part of that, Kelly says, you can call this a success, even though it's hardly finding any guns, because it must be serving as a deterrent. People who are afraid of getting stopped and frisked and arrested for their illegal weapons just aren't bringing them out on the streets. But I think what you wrote in the article, which was central, is that Judge Shindlin is not even allowing that testimony into the trial.
Right. That's why I think court cases make difficult forums for making public policy, because Judge Shindlin is saying, I am not getting involved in the merits of stop and frisk as a law enforcement technique. My only job is to determine if people's constitutional rights are being violated. She said, at one point in court, you know what? If we got rid of Miranda warnings, maybe that would make the streets safer. Maybe that would reduce crime. But that's not what the law is. My job is to enforce the law, the Constitution, and that's all I'm going to do in this case.
Constitution. She's a federal judge. This is a constitutionality of stop and frisk case. Fourth Amendment, whether people are being stopped and searched with reasonable suspicion that they've actually done something wrong, as
correct,
the Constitution requires. So that's not a controversial proposition on her part, is it? To say, I'm not looking at whether this policy is successful. I'm only looking at whether it's constitutional. Isn't that unambiguously her job?
I think it's a little more complicated than that. And I think she has narrowed the evidence in a way that is not entirely appropriate, because, you know, she is basically saying that the cops are engaged. Or she has said previously, because this is not Shindlin's first stop and frisk case. She has found against the cops previously in a series of other cases. And I by prohibiting the cops from saying this is a good faith and effective technique for stopping and preventing crime, she is not getting an appropriate picture of what stop and frisk works like in the real world, especially when she's really questioning the motives of the cops. And I think she may be setting herself up for trouble on appeal, where she has a more conservative appeals court than she is. She's a pretty liberal judge, by limiting the city's evidence in such a way.
Jeffrey Toobin with us on his New Yorker article this week on the stop and frisk constitutionality trial, closing arguments expected this week. And you characterize Judge Shindlin as a person who believes the police lie. Why do you describe her that way?
Well, because she's found it over and over again. You know, Judge Shindlin was appointed by President Clinton in 1994 at the suggestion of Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. She
– hardly an anti-law enforcement figure.
Hardly an anti-law enforcement figure, but not someone she knew particularly well. I think she was somewhat of a surprise pick for the Southern District. She had spent most of her career in the Eastern District in Brooklyn. After – almost 20 years on the bench, she has a long record, and she has suppressed evidence she has found against the police far more than most judges do in that courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Now, that may be because she's uniquely courageous and doesn't care about the consequences. It may also be because she's just biased against cops. You will get
– Have you come to a conclusion?
You know what?
You seem to be leaning toward biased against cops.
You know what? I have to say, it's funny. You know, the people who've read the story – feel, I think, read into it what they think. I'm pretty agnostic on that question. The one thing's for sure is that she does find against the cops far more than most other officers. What her ultimate motivation is, I think I'm going to take a pass on that question because I don't know.
She will get to decide if stop and frisk is constitutional by herself. This is a bench trial, not
correct,
a jury trial. And then what if she finds that it is unconstitutional? What's the remedy? You can't tell the police not to stop people who genuinely do look like they're doing something that gives a police officer reasonable suspicion to believe that they may have committed a crime. So how does the judge from the bench order the policy to change?
Well, what the plaintiffs are asking for here is internal monitor to be appointed, essentially someone who answers to the judge, not to Ray Kelly or his successors, to supervise both the training and the implementation of how stop and frisk works in the real world. Mayor Bloomberg just gave a speech at One Police Plaza where he said this is a particularly terrible idea to have cops answering to two authorities if this were to happen, the monitor as well as the police commissioner. So that would be a very controversial move on her part.
And it's an issue in the mayoral race.
Right.
Even Christine Quinn, who generally supports the mayor on things, has an inspector general proposal out there.
Right. Both Bill de Blasio and Bill Thompson have said they want to change stop and frisk. Only John Liu has says he wants to end it altogether,
right,
which strikes me as impossible because every police force does some stop and frisk.
And listeners will be talking about very interesting plot twists in the mayoral race coming up next after Jeffrey, including a writer for the conservative New York Sun who says Anthony Weiner might be the most conservative Democrat in the race. if and when he enters, as expected, probably this week. So we'll get to that. But before you go, you wrote a piece called The Real IRS Scandal. Was that in the magazine?
That was in the website.
That was on the New Yorker website. The Real IRS Scandal, that there's a bigger one than targeting groups by their political affiliation to slow down their tax-exempt status application. What's this bigger scandal?
Well, the scandal is that the whole reason why the IRS is looking at groups like this is that they are seeking permission to be 501c4 organizations, which means they don't have to pay certain taxes, and most importantly, they don't have to disclose their donors. And according to the IRS rules, the only groups that are entitled to be social welfare or to be 501c4 organizations are so-called social welfare organizations that are not mostly political. And what has happened in the last 10 years, especially in the last 8 years since the Citizens United case, is that that distinction has broken down completely, that 501c4 organizations, whether they are American Crossroads, which is Karl Rove's organization, or some certain liberal organizations, are obviously engaging in politics and with undisclosed donors. And the IRS, the problem is not that they are investigating too much, which is sort of what this scandal is purportedly about, is that they are enforcing the law too little, that they are letting all sorts of groups do politics with secret donors when the law, at least in theory, on the book, says they shouldn't be allowed to do that.
And we'll keep reporting on that. This is something we've been talking about for a few days on the show, and we'll keep following that aspect of the scandal. Notable to me is that President Obama, who believes what you just said, agrees that Citizens United has enabled this flood of sort of fraudulent, successful applications to be tax-exempt organizations, that he hasn't mentioned it at all. He's only playing defense on
right. He's decided
how
to throw the IRS under the bus
and
not talk and about the larger policy issue.
So one of the things that I think remains to be seen is whether the attention being brought now to the troubles of the IRS because of the Cincinnati mess might lead to this conversation in a serious way, but yet to be seen. All right. Jeffrey Toobin, staff writer for The New Yorker, CNN legal analyst, author of, soon to be released in paperback, The Oath, The Obama White House and the Supreme Court. Very, very interesting. Really good, deeply reported article on Stop and Frisk. And we barely scratched the surface of some of the other history there with Shinlin and 9/11 and this other case where a guy hit a gun in his crotch and police claimed they didn't find it.
That's
and
right.
Good piece. Jeffrey Toobin, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, those developments in the mayoral race, including the argument that Anthony Weiner might be the conservative Democrat in the pack. Stay with us.